All right, let's see. Oh, good, I thought I forgot my notes, so I did not. So that's good, I have something to say. All right, so this month we are celebrating Women's History Month, and today we are going to honor Myrtle Fillmore, who is the co-founder of Unity. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about her. Mary Caroline Page, who later took the name Myrtle, grew up in a strict Methodist home. After a year at Oberlin College, she became a school teacher in Clinton, Missouri, and then in Denison, Texas. And in Denison, she met Charles Fillmore, whom she married in 1881. And I did some math, and I figured out how old she was when she got married and was a little horrified, but I know that that was the time. So you could do the math. 1868 to 1881. She was a child bride, but I'll leave my judgment for that later. Okay, so Myrtle was afflicted with tuberculosis at a young age and spent many years believing that she was incurably weak and sickly. While attending a lecture by metaphysician Dr. E.B. Weeks, who was a student of Emma Curtis Hopkins, who was also one of the teachers of religious science founder Ernest Holmes, this was in 1886, Myrtle learned of her innate potential for divine healing through the use of affirmative prayer. She began regularly affirming, "I am a child of God, and therefore I do not inherit sickness." Over time, she was healed of the tuberculosis that had threatened her life. And Myrtle was so excited about her healing discovery that she began working with others in need of healing. In 1889, along with her husband, they began publication of a magazine called Modern Thought. After 1895, it was called Unity. In 1893, they began publishing a second magazine, We Wisdom, for children. In 1890, they organized a Society of Silent Unity, which offered the service of effective prayer on behalf of beset persons who wrote to request it. Though it was not their intention, the organizational structure came to closely resemble that of a denomination, with a training school turning out ministers with hundreds of separate Unity churches throughout the Midwest and California. And that became Silent Unity, which is still in operation today. You could call for, and you don't have to write them anymore. You could call them, and they will pray with you. So the following quotes are from her manuscripts and personal papers. She says this: "The light of God revealed to us, the thought came to me first, that life was of God, that we were inseparably one with the source, and that we inherited from the divine and perfect Father. What that revelation did to me at first was not apparent to the senses, but it held my mind above negation, and I began to claim my birthright and to act as though I believed myself the child of God, filled with his life. Others saw that there was something new in me. They asked me to share it, and I did. Others were healed and began to study. My husband continued his business, and at first took little interest in what I was doing. But after a time, he became absorbed in the study of truth, too. We consecrated ourselves to the Lord and kept doing daily that which we felt led to do. We began to prosper a little at a time, and our health continued to improve." Unity grew rapidly, and after World War I, the Fillmores built a permanent home for the movement at Lee's Summit. And Myrtle lived to be 86 years old, making her transition in 1931. So we came across a recording of Myrtle doing her prayer of faith. And so we'd show you the video of that. It's an old recording, so we may need to listen closely.
God is my help in every need. God does my every hunger feed. God walks beside me, guides my way through every moment of the day. I now am wise, I now am true, patient, kind, and loving too. All things I am, can do, and be. through Christ the truth that is in me. God is my health. I can't be sick. God is my strength. I'm sailing quick. God is my all. I know no fear. Since God and love and truth are here. Amen.
And so that's Myrtle Fillmore. Huge impact on our world and on our movement. And so today we're continuing our theme of the courage to surrender with my talk, Flying and Falling. Isn't that great? Flying and Falling. And so, this comes from one of the chapters in the book that we're reading for the month. I know that you can tell how much I love the book that we're reading this month. And I know that Suzanne's reading was a little bit long today, but it was really important, and I think that it says something real about us and about the experience that we have in this life. So often we have this ideal of what it's supposed to look like, you know, or that of what living a spiritual life is. You know, sometimes when people talk about being spiritual, they go very, their voice changes, their demeanor changes. We sometimes go like that. You know, the idea that to be spiritual, to walk a spiritual path, means that we're supposed to try and be like the Dalai Lama, and we're supposed to learn how to meditate and levitate, right? Like, there's this idea that I'll get there when I know that I can levitate. And of course, I'm kidding. But there's something that happens that we have this idea of what it means to be spiritual, of what it means to be in that enlightened state, what it means to be succeeding in this, right? Or succeeding in life. And the truth is that's not real. You know, our goal here is to be fully immersed and embracing of this life experience that we have and bringing the best of us, the most of us, the greatest potentiality that we have into being. That's the spiritual path. And I love that he says that maybe wholeness and health is a little bit more gritty than we think it is. Maybe it's a little bit more down and dirty. Maybe we need to roll up our sleeves and get into life a little bit and dig it up. I've been spending a whole heck of a lot of time in my garden, so getting ready. And de-weeding. Anybody doing weeding? We better do it now before all the moisture in the soil goes away, because then it's not possible, right? So that's the idea, is that we get into being in life, being engaged in life fully, and allowing this inspiration that comes from within us, who we're inspired to be, what we're inspired to do, how we are creating our life to come forth freely and fully. And not limit ourselves and not hold ourselves back and not pretend that we're something that we're not, or pretend that we have a unrealistic goal of what it means to be spiritual. And so today, my talk is about flying and falling, and the title came from one of the chapters in the book, which I'm going to address his material from the book a little bit later, but as soon as I said it, as soon as I typed it, as soon as I sent all the information out to everybody, all of this information started pouring into me from all these different places about this topic. I was like shocked this week, because every time I put on Facebook, something else was up. Every time I opened my email, somebody else had sent me something. I opened up a book that happened to fall off the shelf. I still don't know how that happened. Thank you, God. And I just picked it up, and there was this whole thing. I was like, oh my goodness, that's exactly what I'm talking about this week, you know? And so if I had any doubt that I'm not supported, that went out the window this week, because I have enough for a month of talks, and I'm not going to try and get a whole month in the next little while. Of course, you notice I didn't say how long I am talking. My favorite meme this week was a picture of people at church, and it said, the Sunday sermon is sometimes it's an inspiration and other times it's a hostage situation. And so I'm going to try and not make you feel like we're going on the hostage situation path here. But so there are times in our lives when we feel like we're flying, right? Can you think in your mind, pull up a moment where you feel like in your life that you were flying? And there are times in our life where we feel like we're falling, like we're plummeting into the ground, right? And then there's that moment that I love, one of my spiritual teachers says, when you're firmly planted in midair, right? Like when we are firmly planted in midair, anything's possible, and we have no idea if we're flying or falling or what's going on. And so there's this spiritual component to this that as we wake up to the fact that we're at choice. We're at choice to realize if we're flying or falling. But one of the things that I came about in starting to think about this and look at this, I went to that trove of wisdom called Google and found a whole heck of a lot of information about the difference between flying and falling and what the definition is and all of that. So for some of my science friends here, I've got some information for you that hopefully, well, I've got some information for everybody else. For my science friends, I hope you're going to put up with me and hope that I do this correctly. But this is the deal. So what things fly? Sometimes it's hard to decide whether something is flying or not. And what's the definition of that? A stone flying through the air? A hot air balloon? How do we decide? And so all flying objects have some things in common. For some things, it's easy to see and it's easy to decide. A bird, right? Is it a bird? Is it a plane? Is it Superman? You know, all those things are flying, right? But again, there's some things that we're not sure. So a stone, again, being thrown through the air, a hang glider. And so from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Douglas Adams says, there's an art, it says, or rather a knack of flying. The knack lies in learning how to throw yourself at the ground and miss, right? So how do we do this, and which things are truly flying? Well, traditional definition of flight is that it needs two things. Thrust and lift are the two things that an object needs. Some would use this to say that the hang glider is not flying because it doesn't have thrust. And it certainly excludes a stone being thrown through the air because it has neither thrust nor lift. But a hang glider pilot was recently questioned about whether he was really flying while he was on his hang glider. And he said, all right, well, come on up on my hang glider and I'll drop you off and you can see if you think I'm flying. Right? Now, most people would agree that the person falling from the hang glider is not flying, but that the person still on the hang glider is. And don't worry, the guy falling off the hang glider has a parachute in my story, okay? So they're all safe and they land perfectly to the ground. So lift is to balance the force of gravity, right? Without lift, an object would fall to the ground. And thrust to counter the force of drag or air resistance. Without thrust, an object will lose its forward momentum, which also results in it falling to the ground. And so falling, the person who falls from the hang glider has no lift to counter gravity. So they fall towards the ground, and they have no thrust. And so I would say that the person falling off the hang glider would be falling, literally falling. So let's take these from the spiritual perspective. So I'm going to take lift first. So lift, again, is that which counteracts the force of gravity. And what I'm going to say is lift is, in the spiritual world, is our connection with the divine, is our connection to God. Now we're going to insert the cheesy wind beneath your wings statement here. Right? You get it? Okay. I'm not going to go there, but I'm going to give it to you for anybody who wants it. God is the wind beneath your wings, right? So we want to think about that. So our connection to the divine life is that which lifts us up. So think about those moments when, you know, there are different times in our lives when our life may feel like it's in the dumps or in the toilet, and we're laying in bed with our head under the pillow, and we don't stay. We're like, enough is enough, I can't handle this, I'm done, and we get to that place, right? We get to that place of immobility. And so what is it that gets us up? What is it that gets us to get up and start another day? It's God. It's that divine impulse, that divine spark, that divine presence that's inside of you, that powerful presence of life that is not going to let you just stop and die. It's not going to let you do that. No matter how much in despair, no matter how dark it seems, no matter how upset we are about something, that divine life is not going to let us just succumb to it. That's the lift in our lives. Lift is that which motivates us and reminds us that there's something greater happening. And so I have seen people go through incredibly dark moments. I have seen people go through incredible, difficult tragedies. and heartbreak and pain and suffering and all sorts of things. And each one of the ones that I walked through got through that, and I bore witness to the fact that they had a powerful connection to God that guided them. And I know that there are moments to differing degrees that each one of us has gone through one of those things. You know, there's a lot of talk in religious science churches about creating the joy and creating the and life is good and all of it's great. And I agree with that it's a possibility, but I think we need to start where we are and we need to start to be honest, right? So that's why we're talking about some of the more grittier things and some of the more difficult challenges that we go through, because I know that each one of us has the potential and the possibility to move through it because we've got lift, because we've got God. Because there's something else operating in our life there to guide us. And so we can't be afraid to look at the challenge. We can't be afraid to bear witness and to be honest about where we are. If you are in a moment of challenge and you are in a moment of despair, it's okay to say, you know what, it really stinks right now. This is really hard. Because when we claimed that, when you're able to say that, it's not like you're claiming it forever. I want you to remember that this too shall pass. It has not come to stay. And so as we start to move forward in our life, again, one step at a time, we go with that support of the divine life, that part of you that wants so greatly to be expressed. The part of you that wants so greatly to be embraced. And so the idea of embracing lift in our life and finding the lift and the wind beneath our wings, what that is it's faith. It's trust and faith and surrendering into that. It's our call to be courageous enough to surrender into the fact that we are connected to something bigger than we are, and it loves us. It wants only good for us. We have to trust that. We have to allow that. And so that's the lift. And there's so much written about trust and faith in the connection of God from the Bible, from Romans 15. May the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in him, so that you may overflow with hope by the power of the Holy Spirit. Psalm 91. I will say of the Lord, he is my refuge and my fortress. My God, in him will I trust. And from Proverbs, trust in the Lord with all thine heart and lean not onto thine own understanding. And so that used to speak very differently to me because that last one about not leaning not on your own understanding, I never understood it. Leaning on my own understanding, I didn't get it. I didn't understand it. But when I realized that what they were talking about is not, because I trust my intuition so much, I trust that impulse that wants to come forward in me. I'm really comfortable with that. But I realize that what it's talking about is talking about our minds, is talking about our own egoic idea of how things should be. Don't trust that. Don't trust the limited sense of you that you have been trained to have for your whole life because somebody else told you something about you. You need to trust that deep connection, that deep call, because that's God moving through you. We trust in that divine life. And as we are able to move into a place of faith, it allows space for God in our lives. It allows space for the divine life to be lived as us. And it allows that upward rush of support to come and take us into a place where we can soar, where we can fly. The other one is thrust. Now, thrust is another topic. And I do have to say, when I was putting this together this week, I was like, does that sound dirty, lift and thrust? I hope not. I'm like, hey. I didn't really want it to sound dirty. But they're technical terms. So, let's look at thrust. So thrust is the spiritual sense, in the spiritual sense, is living an intentional life. It's living on purpose. It's awakening to the fact that we have something to contribute here to this life, that we have something to be and something to do. Setting intentions can be a magical thing that moves us from falling to flying. I can't remember, I don't know if this is an actual scene in a movie or a cartoon, it's probably a cartoon or something, but there's that moment, right? There's that moment when let's call it the baby bird, is pushed out of the nest, right? And it starts tumbling and falling down towards the ground, and then all of a sudden, it remembers, I'm a bird, right before it hits the ground, and it flies, you know? It's like, I don't want to go there, I want to go there, and it moves, you know? That's the picture I've got in my head of this, is that we need to awaken to the fact of who we are, set some intentions, see where we want to go, and move in that direction. That's the difference between falling and flying. To realize that we operate in a matrix of being in this life, and that we have something to contribute to it. Now, maybe it's being the best mother you can be, or the best parent, the best father. Maybe it's about contributing to the wellness of the people around you, caring for the people that you love. Maybe it's about your work life and sharing and doing the best work you can to be of service in the area of your career. Maybe it's in caring for your family or caring for your friends or whatever that is, but there's an opportunity for each and every one of us to contribute to something, to contribute you, your individual gift. And again, I say this all the time, but I don't care if you're 2 or 200. You're breathing, you got something to give. If you're still here, which everybody in this room still is, I'm hoping it's only I haven't gone that long, you know, that it's time for us to share something, to participate, to engage in this world at this time. And you can see how we started this morning. We have to. This is at a critical moment where everyone is being called to step up and step out. That we have a view of the world and a way of being, particularly because we are called to this, to be here today in this philosophy, that we've got something to share. We've got a gift to give, the appreciation and the honoring of all paths to God. If that's the only thing, that we could give respect to everyone we meet, then we need to start doing it. That's the gift. And so that's the idea of thrust, is that you start moving in a specific direction. This is the Facebook thing I found this week. One of my colleagues, Reverend Dr. Leon Campbell, who's one of the ministers at the Agape International Spiritual Center in Los Angeles, put up a little story. He said this. One day a young man said to his teacher, "When will I fly? I've been wondering why I can't get my life together. I'm afraid that I might live like this forever. I've tried over and over again, wondering when the trials and tribulations will end." The teacher closed his eyes, and after a very long sigh, he replied, "When it's no longer just about you, that's when you will fly." Being a part of the matrix of life and giving of ourselves is a quick way to ensure that we're living on purpose. So you can see how there's a difference between falling and flying. And sometimes we may think that we're falling in our life. Sometimes we may think that we're failing, that we're falling, plummeting to the ground. But when we remember, when we pause, in those moments I'm going to invite us to pause and remember there's something greater unfolding here. That's the lift. And to put our attention on where we want to go and how we want to support others, that's the thrust. And that will turn you into that baby bird that just takes off and does not hit the ground. Maybe we bounce once. We've all got our little scars and our bruises. But then I'll tell you, you won't bounce more than once because you'll remember you're a bird and you can fly, right? It's not going to happen very much. But it takes being conscious and waking up to the fact that something greater is operating. Now, from the book of the month, he says this, that rarely do we experience significant growth in times of ease and perfect moments of comfort, right? Like, rarely do we experience great growth and expansion and newness in times of ease. Those times of ease are moments where we kind of get a little complacent. We might get a little apathetic. Things are pretty good right now. I just want to pull back and not engage. And then sometimes we get a little lazy, right, about creating something new. And I think that that's what happens in the cycle of our lives. And then life comes back in and bumps us to that next evolution of growth. In the book, he tells a story of from the movie Batman Begins. He says that Bruce Wayne finds himself in a moment of desperation, watching Wayne Manor burning to the ground and coming to grips with what seems to be his catastrophic failure and the subsequent destruction of his dead father's legacy. In response to his lament, Bruce's steadfast servant, Alfred, reminds him of a question Bruce's father would often ask his young son to encourage him when injury or disappointment would come. He said, "Why do we fall?" And then Alfred continues, adding the elder Wayne's familiar reply, "So we can learn to pick ourselves up." It's a reminder that for Bruce and for those of us watching, that tragedy and challenge is often our greatest teacher. As cruel as its methods feel and as painful as the education itself can be in the moment. But I'll tell you, in those moments where we learn through tragedy, through pain, through challenge, you're never going to forget it. Once you take that step forward, you claim your power, you claim your truth, you awaken to what you're capable of, you never forget it. You will never go back. You'll never go back to sleep. You know, it's said that a tree's roots grow more during difficult winter seasons than in mild ones. The roots need to dig further down into the ground to find sustenance in times of challenge and in those challenging conditions. And so what it does is it strengthens the tree and it stands taller and stronger, and so that it can weather more challenging times to come. Those moments, those things that we have experienced through our past, those challenging moments, those life events that happen that feel like tragedies, what it does is it strengthens us. Yeah, we get some bruises. We all have some scars. We all have some bumps and bruises along the way. But what happens is it fortifies you. It strengthens you, and it allows you to know a part of yourself that you wouldn't have known if you hadn't gone through it. And of course, this all calls us back to our faith. Everything that happens in our life, I always say, and I teach my practitioner students all the time, that anything that you see happening in your world, anything that happens to you, anything outside pulls you in. It doesn't pull us into the world more. It pulls us into God more. It pulls us into our knowing and into the truth that's alive within us more. And so instead of getting hypnotized by the situations of the world, we need to come back in and go deep, dig deeper to what we know to be true. Because when we connect to that, when we claim that and we realize that, what happens is that everything outside of us starts to shift and change. It's like how we started today with this little candle of peace. That candle of truth is alive within you. Maybe it is an experience of peace. Maybe it's a possibility. Maybe it's the possibility of you experiencing joy or love. But that candle flame is burning at the center of your being. And it takes putting your attention upon it for it to grow. It's not going to grow and expand into your being until you acknowledge it and you're with it. And when you're with it, that experience starts to grow and fill you with the feeling and the knowing that you are something greater. That's how we develop our faith. If there's something that you're challenged with, that you're going through, again, that's why we're doing the workshop today. That's why we're doing this every month. I'm committed to having us have tools to work these situations when they pop up in our lives. And so we've decided to put a workshop in every month and invite you, just for a love donation, I don't care, 5, 10, 20 bucks, whatever you got, to come and get a spiritual tool for your toolbox, to walk through this process and move into a place for moving from fear to faith. From that place where you think that you're broken, that you think that you're limited, that you think that you're not capable, to a place of realizing that you are part of the divine plan because you were created. You were born. That means you're worthy. That means you're loved. That means this life needs you. And we need to let go of all that limitation and all that junk that we're carrying and step into our light. Again, the world needs us to shine. My last story was this, and I couldn't not do this one. Again, you go to the coolest church. What church talks about the Simpsons? I don't know. There's a moment in the Simpsons when Homer, prompted by Marge, his wife, offers a hilariously terrible attempt at consoling his children who've just experienced the sting of failure. He says this, "Kids, you tried your best, and you failed miserably. The lesson is, never try." Right? Now, that's really funny, and that's why I wanted to bring it forward. But do you know how common that is? Do you know how common that experience is? That we try something, and it doesn't work out the first time, and then we give up. We give up on life. We give up on ourselves. We give up on whatever that divine inspiration was to make us try in the first place. I've seen it over and over and over again. So many of us get are so afraid of criticism. We're so afraid of negativity or rejection or any of that, that we stop trying, that we stop giving ourselves away to life. Maybe the relationship may not be going so great, so then we pull back and we harden our hearts and we put up our barriers to protect ourselves. And we never try, we never get anywhere from that. That's the tragedy, I think. Now, of course, I never want anyone to give themselves to an abusive situation. Barriers are good when we need them. Let's have healthy boundaries and all of that. But you are the one who will know when you are fooling yourself. You are the one that can tell when you are holding yourself back from life because you're afraid of it. You are the one who's going to know that you have something to offer, that you have a word of comfort to give, that you have a hand to reach out to help somebody else, that you have an opportunity to step up to a higher way. You're the one who's going to know that, and only you can choose to step into it. Only you are the one who can decide if you're flying or if you're falling. Cami Garcia, in her book, Beautiful Redemption, said, "Flying or falling, it's up to us." It's up to you. It's up to you to decide what it is that you're doing. It's up to you to surrender into this divine life as it unfolds. You get to choose it. And so by connecting to that divine presence and realizing that God is our life, by setting our intentions and moving in a purposeful, meaningful direction with who we are in the world, and by flinging ourselves off the cliff, choosing to fly. So my suggestion for us, my challenge for you this week, is to navigate through your week, to wake up to the fact that you're a bird. You have forgotten, but you are a bird. And you know what? You can fly. And so it is.